Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic week so far. It's going to get better because you tuned in to us. Rich Lowry, man, he's always insightful, editor of National Review. He's going to be on our case. His last article, Don't Knock Trump's Bible Marketing. I thought that was a really interesting take. And Matt Maurer is going to be with us in 15 minutes. President of Valcor LLC, serves as the senior White House advisor, U.S. State Department, where he advised the Secretary of State in the Trump administration. So I've got to get his take on foreign policy as it relates to Trump. They're all over Biden. And they're all over Biden for his Ukraine policy. They're mad that the Republicans aren't backing. Many aren't backing him in Ukraine. They're also, some are mad that Biden is supporting Israel. Some are mad that they're holding off on some Israel aid. We'll talk about it all and how Trump might handle these complicated situations that Joe Biden had left him if, in fact, he wins. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The need to begin getting aggressive with Hezbollah, with the IRGC. Again, it's all Iran, Trace. Israel is prepared to raise the stakes at any minute.
They are. It's a widening war. It looks like it's happening as Israel takes aim on Iran and increases pace on Hezbollah hits. Does this work for the U.S.? Say yes.
Number two.
The gag order impinges the First, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights of President Trump and the public's right to a public trial. The public must know all of the facts surrounding and underlying this case and the players in this case and their credibility.
Yeah, the president wants a new judge in the New York case. Trump team makes their case with Alvin Bragg going to trial April 15th as more details come out and how he's made the $175 million bond.
Number one.
But I stand before you today to declare that Joe Biden's border bloodbath, and that's what it is. It's a bloodbath, and it's destroying our country. It's a very bad thing happening. It's going to end on the day that I take office.
And the president really wants to take office. That's my take from last week, and that's my take from watching him last night. Trump on the trail. He goes to bat for cops. He slams the border policy and has to be happy about the latest Wall Street Journal battleground polls. And we have it all. So I'll lay out the polls and why he got some good news after he left the stump. Number one, it's good to see a normal campaign again. You know, whether it's Biden going around, flying around, raising money, he doesn't really go on the stump much because he's always interrupted by protesters and does not get good crowds, even as a president. And it's good to see this president get out and about. Why? He's got to go to Wisconsin, find a way to win there. He won in 2016, not in 2020, in a flat-footed tie now. He's got to find out and how to win back suburban moms there. It's going to be harder with a Democratic governor who's going to do everything possible to put Joe Biden in office again. And in Michigan, he's leading in Michigan, and he was over there in Grand Rapids. Here's a little of his message about what he says is now a 50-state problem, and that is the broken border. Cut four.
It's a sad shame. Under crooked Joe Biden, every state is now a border state. Every town is now a border town because Joe Biden has brought the carnage and chaos and killing from all over the world and dumped it straight into our backyards. People are coming in from prisons and mental institutions. Nobody's ever seen anything like it.
And he also said, too, he said, oh, if these countries don't want to take their people back, well, flying them back anyway. Venezuela, you're getting them all back. Listen, I know there's people listening to me right now might have Venezuelans on their favorite baseball team. They might live next door and be fantastic. The latest ones coming here, a lot have huge problems, neck tattoos, and wannabe gangsters, including the ones they just dragged out of a Bronx basement who were squatting there. Dozens of motorcycles in the backyard. They wrecked the place. A couple of them on weapons charges, murder charges, all but two let out with no bail. That's crazy states. Every state is now a border state, as the president said. And he found also some problems when it comes to illegal immigrants committing murder. We also know, too, there's a real concern from terrorists about these people coming across the border. We know it because General McKenzie told us that. Here's a little bit more of what the president was saying in Michigan yesterday. Cut one.
But I stand before you today to declare that Joe Biden's border bloodbath, and that's what it is. It's a bloodbath, and it's destroying our country. It's a very bad thing happening. It's going to end on the day that I take office.
He's going to focus on it, and they got to be a plan. And Tom Homan's going to be in the middle of it. I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Morgan's back on top of it. They'll have someone strong on Homeland Security, and there's going to be – and the message is going to go out. Stop coming. So before I go to the polls, I just want you to hear the president's taunting them with bloodbath, because bloodbath is a common term in the financial world. Bloodbath is when you lose by a lot in the sports world. We already know about it. You know, you lose a bunch of players to injury when you go out to play. If you're the Knicks going out to play the Heat last night, if they don't find a way to get the, you know, get the ball to somebody else besides Brunson, it's going to be a bloodbath. Nobody thinks anyone's going to get shot. So the president's put it in the title of his event. That really upset KJP. Cut to.
We're hearing clearly awful rhetoric from the other side. So, but what we know, what this president believes, and you've heard this president say this before, is that we know immigrants strengthen our country and our economy as well. It goes hand in hand here. Think about the critical work. These eight immigrants were doing on Key Bridge when it collapsed.
Do you think he's really talking about eight legal immigrants if they were in fact legal? Everybody knows that immigration makes up our country, and you're just being disingenuous, and we can see through it in 2024. Maybe we were caught off guard in 2016, but there's a huge difference. Now, I brought up those squatters before. It's important you know who they are. So you got gun and a drug bust. Neighbors came out and said there's people squatting, doing drugs and with children in the basement of an apartment, and the owner has no idea that they're there. Six of the eight that were dragged out of there, gun-toting, drug-dealing migrant squatters. A frustrated neighbor on Tuesday said the unruly noisy crew brought nothing but trouble on the block. Motorcycles up and down. The NYPD then collared the squatters, who set up shop across the street from PS 56 inside a multifamily house on Hull Avenue on the boroughs of the Norwood section, just know in New York City, it's a working class area. After one of them pointed a 9mm pistol at someone else on the property on Wednesday, nobody gets arrested. A 22-year-old Venezuelan was taken into custody. He had a pistol under his arm when arrested, cut loose on no bail. How about Hector Villalata? 24-year-old Venezuelan, alleged attempted murder, case dropped because the victim didn't come forward. People say they feared for their life. These are some of the real-life issues in inner city, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, that's bringing this issue home like it didn't in 2016, and he still won. So this is why the president's got to feel pretty good today. He leads in six of seven swing states, in Pennsylvania only by three. But important, he lost there in 2020. Michigan, he lost in 2021 and 2016. He's up by three. In Arizona, he's up by five. You know, he lost that in 2020. In Georgia, this is a surprise to me. I thought he was up by more. He's up by only one. In Nevada, this would be a stunner. Trump up by four. North Carolina, this is what Biden wants to flip that. He trails by six. Wisconsin, they're tied at 46-46. Please tell me why the president should not feel optimistic about that. It's way too early to be dancing in the end zone, but it's not too early to say things are going in my direction. And the president's still not giving up on debating. He wants to see the debate. Now factor in third-party factor. When RFK picked his liberal left-wing running mate, she's bright, but she's left. She's actually donated to George Gascon, that corrupt DA over in Los Angeles. Let out all the criminals. Don't prosecute crime. You know exactly where she stood. She was married to the Google president. You know exactly where she stands. She's out on the West Coast. She's rich. Probably a wonderful person. But she's way left. What does that say about how RFK wants to run? I love the guy. He seemed so impressive. Interviewed him four or five times. He'll be on our show, too. No doubt about it. But here he is, letting everyone know. I may be left, but man, do I have a problem with Joe Biden. Cut 14.
President Biden has done something that no other president in history has done, which is to order media, particularly the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Google to censor his political opponents. I can say this because I just won a lawsuit in the Federal Court of Appeals now before the Supreme Court because he began censoring me 37 hours after he took the oath of office swearing to defend the Constitution. White House officials were on email with Facebook saying to them, you got to take down his posts. If you have a president who can censor his political opponents, right. He is a license for any kind of atrocity. That is a genuine threat to our democracy.
All right. So that's where we stand. Without RFK, the president's winning in almost every battleground state tied in Wisconsin. With RFK in, he takes most votes from Biden. There is a third-party office, a desk, they call it, in the Biden campaign, just focus on Jill Stein, just focus on Cornel West, and mostly focus on RFK Jr., using Kennedy's against Kennedy. How weird is it that Joe Biden's got his dad's bust in his office, Oval Office, but won't even acknowledge RFK Jr.? You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Matt Maurer's next, and we'll talk more about just politics, but it's getting so intriguing, 2024. We'll open it up, and then we'll have Rich Lowry after that. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So it shakes the Iranians. It makes them begin to look for spies within their midst. So in addition to the actual event, what you're getting is sort of a psychological warfare that we're so plugged into you that we can get at it. And that's, of course, been the key whenever the U.S. and Iran together have gone after an Iranian nuclear facility. And of course, remember, it was President Trump who ordered the killing of the senior commander of the Quds Force, General Soleimani, back in 2020.
And they did kill a whole bunch of guys, including higher up in the Quds Force with Iran. They were located in Syria, and I believe they're rattled to the core. I even saw some of the protests in Tehran. Didn't seem that big. I don't know how popular they are. Matt Maurer joins us now, president of Valcour LLC. He served as senior White House advisor, the U.S. Department of State, where he advised the Secretary of State in the Trump administration. Matt, welcome.
Brian, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
So, Matt, some people are getting nervous. They're saying, okay, the Israelis have their hands full finishing off Hamas in Gaza. Why are they taking out Iranians in Syria? I personally love it, but why don't you lay it out for us?
Well, you got to remember, everything's interconnected, and specifically in the Middle East, everything's interconnected. You know, Iran is propping up a number of militia groups throughout the region. They are funding Hamas. They are funding Hezbollah. That's been well documented at this point. And so what Israel is looking at is not just the immediate threat directly on their border, which obviously came from Hamas in Gaza and then Hezbollah in the north, but they're also looking at the larger regional threat. And that's how you have to look at all these issues these days, Brian. And, you know, I think it's something that President Trump did a really smart job of doing and we execute on at the State Department was ensuring that we weren't just looking at each piece of the world in a silo. You can't these days. They're all interconnected. What happens in the Middle East with Iran is connected to what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. It's connected with what might happen between China and Taiwan.
Right.
You got to look at it all in the same piece of the puzzle.
Look, we know that Hamas was training in Iran. They were also meeting in Lebanon. We knew this almost within days, thanks to the Wall Street Journal, not denied. But this administration tries to walk it back and say there's indications that Iran really didn't know Hamas was going to stage that October 7th attack. Clearly, intelligence told us different. So they have lost their top commander of Iran's Revolutionary Guard, a senior commander, and seven officials overall. That's a big message sent. One was in charge of getting weapons into Hezbollah, and meanwhile, Israel is hitting Hezbollah hard. They're also seeing this as an opportunity. These problems were always there, and now that they're in the war footing, they want to try to get rid of them. Is it possible?
Sure, it's possible. I mean, this is for all the folks who are trying to call for a ceasefire, what they're doing is they're being, one, remarkably naive, in the way you have to approach this. You know, it's as if all of a sudden there's a ceasefire and Hamas is going to be well-behaved and Iran is going to stop their nefarious actions. It's just not how this works. And so Israel is looking at this and saying, this is the moment at which we set the threats on their back foot. And that threat is Iran. And that's why you see them taking this action right now. It's the reason why you've seen Bibi Netanyahu essentially ignore the entreaties from Joe Biden and his administration. And I'll tell you, the reason the Biden administration doesn't want to deal with this is because they are afraid of their own shadow too often on national security. And remember, a lot of the folks who are in this administration are the people who negotiated the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. They're the ones who basically said Iran was able to achieve nuclear weapon as long as it's delayed. You know, these are folks who are playing patty cake with a bunch of thugs in Tehran. And the truth is they're still afraid to this day of drawing a hard line. You saw a totally different attitude in the last administration. I mean, I was there when we tried to designate the Islamic Republican National, the IRGC, the Islamic Republic Guard, as a terrorist organization in the early days of the administration. It got slow walked by a bunch of bureaucrats throughout the federal government. Eventually got done 2 years later. I know you're just talking before to folks who are talking about the killing of Soleimani. That was only possible because Donald Trump was willing to take on that
yep.
tough action that a lot of national security experts said don't do. And yet because of it, he was able to take out some top brass of the IRGC. Mm-hmm. And as a result, America, you know, the world is a safer place.
So Rafah, do you believe Bibi Netanyahu says we're going into Rafah? They got four brigades left. Well, they came out yesterday and said that they believe that the Hamas leadership has been decimated. They're not even communicating with each other. Do you believe they have to crush them in Rafah, even though civilians are there?
They do. And look, they've got to continue to be careful about how they approach this. I mean, I think especially right now, you know, they are going to be dependent. Let's just be candid about it. They are going to be dependent upon support from the United States and the rest of the Western world in this pursuit. And so, you know, the way they conduct this, and I do believe they have to go to Rafah. They have to end this now. They have to send a clear, decisive message. But in order to do it in a way that continues to have support from the international community, which yeah. they're going to need both now and in the future, they got to be careful of the way they execute on this. Obviously, you know, what happened with the, you know, food relief workers yesterday was a tragedy.
Terrible.
And obviously unintentional. But they've got to be careful how they execute this because they're going to be relying on the world,
Matt,
you know, not in the same way that Ukraine is. But, you know, we've got a big aid package coming up that the Senate has passed and the House should take action on that supports not just Israel's efforts, but also Taiwan. And then what's happening in Ukraine, where we need to continue to support them right now as they repel this, you know, invasion from Russia, which is in our best interest to weaken a
right.
geopolitical.
And by the way, you guys gave them javelins. You guys got them. You gave them weapons. You're the one who got pulled down Nord Stream 2. You guys were the ones who sanctioned individuals in Russia. You guys are the ones that pulled out of their cheating on the nuclear arms agreement. So people should understand the reason they had weapons because of you guys. But so far, Republicans are barking on aid. And I just don't understand how you can support Reagan and not go for that aid. Real quick on that, Matt.
Yeah, look, there's nothing more America first than allowing someone else to defeat or weaken a geopolitical threat the way that Ukraine is doing to Russia, right? This is the exact same way Donald Trump beat ISIS. You know, we didn't put troops on the ground. What we did is we provided military equipment and we provided
gotcha.
Air cover.
Matt, thanks so much. We'll end it there. Coming up next, Rich Lowry. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, I've always liked him, and I've known him actually for a long time. I've liked him. He's a very liberal guy. He's probably the most liberal person in the race, including the Green Party. So I think he's probably going to hurt Biden. I don't see him hurting me. Our people are solid. We have a very, very solid core, and I think that core is 60%.
That is President Trump. I was speaking to him last Thursday about RFK. He's officially in. He got on North Carolina's ballot yesterday, and he got a running mate last week. So he's not going anywhere. I don't think he's going to go on the Libertarian ticket either. Rich Lowry has seen it all. He wants to put it in perspective as editor of National Review. Rich, your thoughts about the RFK impact?
Well, the polling, if you believe it, looks as though he's taking more from Biden. We had this bout of Wall Street Journal swing state polls that had Trump ahead in almost every swing state and a head-to-head against Biden, and then ahead by a little bit more when you include the third-party candidates. And certainly the mood music on the left and among Democrats is that they're freaked out about RFK. You know, he's attacked on The View every other day, every time he does an interview, which isn't a lot because the mainstream media is trying to shut him out. You have people on Twitter attacking. I think he was on CNN the other day. How could CNN platform this guy? So they're worried, and it looks as though they should be. There are aspects of Kennedy's message that overlap with Trump's, but the Kennedy name, still, after everything and after all the decades, is a pretty powerful brand among Democrats.
You talked about chronic diseases being an issue like they weren't when his dad was running. And he also talks about the border wall. He said, I thought that Trump was over the top on the border until I went there, and it is a very big problem, so I've changed on that. But he is for the new Green Deal, which is he does not want anything to do with Ukraine aid. What does want to back Israel, the way I understand it. But when he went and named that 37-year-old Nicole Shanahan as his running mate, who's a liberal, a left-winger, he kind of played his cards, didn't he?
And this is, you know, what's shrewd about how Trump is characterizing him as the most left-wing person in the race is, one, that's a signal, hey, you're one of those young progressives or Arab Americans who doesn't like Biden on Israel. There's this other more left-wing person you can support, and also it's obviously warning his supporters off of Kennedy. He's a left-winger, but it's, you know, it's kind of like the Glenn Greenwald or the Bill Maher phenomenon. Different guys, obviously, but the heterodox person on the left is something, because so much of the left has gone so crazy that we've seen more and more of, and Kennedy is kind of an expression of that phenomenon too.
Yeah, this was the big news that made a lot of news. Cut 15.
President Trump said about, you know, about questioning the election and you know, in to the extent that he engaged in an effort to overthrow that, of course, that's a threat to democracy, but it is not the worst threat, undermining the First Amendment of our Constitution and then weaponizing the federal agencies to get his opponents off the ballot, you know, and in my case, I just say particularly denying me Secret Service protection. That's never happened in history.
So he's upset about that. He's upset about he thinks he's a threat to democracy with the shadow banning and suspending his account in the middle of the right in the beginning of the pandemic when he took over.
Crazy, this case in particular. But you look at the polling, you ask people who's a threat to democracy, it's pretty even between Trump and Biden. And it's because that Kennedy is highlighting. And the ballot access thing is just rank hypocrisy, right? You're the party that's supposedly all about defending democracy, and then you want to keep this guy from participating in our democracy to the extent you can. And that's why I'd be curious why you think he won't go to the Libertarian ticket. That's I think it's got to be tempting for him.
But let me tell you, I did ask him, and I could tell you, Rich. So he said to me, because he told Chris Cuomo, I agree with 80% of what libertarians agree with. I said, so why would you go through all, spend all this money, get all these signatures, get on all these states one at a time? He said, because they're a little different. They want me to wait all the way to the convention. And if I wait all the way to the convention and they decide to pick somebody else, I've wasted all my time. I'm no longer a candidate. So I can't take that type of risk. So there you go.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you talk about people who want to be critical, they're critical of the president for using the word bloodbath. They're critical of the president for tweeting out on that pickup truck a picture of a hogtied Joe Biden. Even John Stewart mocked that. But you also took on the critics that said he shouldn't be selling Bibles. I loved your column this week. Tell me about it.
Thanks. Well, it's not as though he's the first one to sell a Bible. I mean, we've pretty much been selling Bibles to one another since we came to these shores. And there are all sorts of boutique specialty Bibles. I mean, you search it online, you're a hunter, you can get the Outdoorsman Bible with all sorts of reflections about wildlife and hunting and fishing. You know, you're a woman, you can get the Woman Studies Bible. And on it goes. There's a Patriots Bible published in 2009, long before this God Bless the USA Bible. And Trump didn't publish this thing, or it's not his idea. It's just a licensing agreement. It was published in 2021. So the idea that this is blasphemous or deeply wrong, I think, is ridiculous. I wouldn't do it. You know, it's like a lot of things. I wouldn't, you know, tweet the hogtied image of Joe Biden or any of that, because I do think they use it against him just to create the sense of constant controversy, which is one of the things that warns people off Trump. But this is like everything. You know, maybe he shouldn't do it, but the reaction is just absurd.
And your reaction to these reaction to these battleground polls. I mean, you see people listening at home, Nevada 48-44, North Carolina 49-43 for Trump. Wisconsin's a flat-footed tie at 46. Pennsylvania, Trump by 3. Michigan, Trump by 3. Arizona, Trump by 5. Georgia just 1. So Kellyanne Conway says, notice that Joe Biden doesn't touch 50 anywhere in these battleground areas as a sitting president. She found that very unique. What should you take away from this?
Trump's ahead, right? He's ahead, narrowly, but ahead. And I had been for a while. It's a 50-50 race now for whatever it's worth. Not everyone's hanging on my percentages. You know, I'd say it's like a 52% proposition that Trump wins. I think you got to favor him a little bit, but things can change. It's still early, but there's no doubt that Biden's running behind. His approval rating in the swing states, I think it was below 40, maybe 38% collectively or something. That's just red alert territory. Democrats should really have their hair on fire, and they do privately. You know, they try to reassure themselves and talk Biden up publicly, but they're freaked out in private.
So I want you to hear, I always like when a Bill Maher comes out or John Stewart comes out, and this week he's way left, I get it, but he also points out the absurd and the overreaction to the pickup truck he pointed out. I also watch Fareed Zakaria every Sunday. It's a smart show. He's vehemently anti-Trump all the time. That's why I thought this was significant. When he found out that Ronna McDaniel was going to be thrown out of NBC before she could even step foot in the studio, he said this, cut 12.
I think the point here is liberals are meant to believe in free speech. That is one of the foundational values of liberalism. And if you're going to say you're going to deplatform 85 million Americans, that's a lot of people. They say, no, it's not about that. It's that she lied. Well, you know, Bill Clinton lied. Under oath. I think last time I checked, he's been on MSNBC. They say, well, she's an election denier. Well, Stacey Abrams was an election denier about her own election, and they've had her on. Liberals often trigger backlash when they use illiberal means to get to their ends. You know, they're like, we're going to do what it takes. And the truth is, and I mean liberalism in a broad sense, liberal democracy, freedom of speech, constitutional. These are precious inheritances that we have. The way you're going to defend it, the way you're going to move it forward is by not cheating, not cutting corners, not having double standards.
Just well said, don't you think? I mean, something I expect you to say.
Yeah, no, it's and I would expect you to say it, Brian.
Yeah, thank you.
No, it's very well said. It's absolutely right. And, you know, just the hypocrisy. You know, they want to defeat Trump by keeping off the ballot if they could, by convicting him and jailing him if they could, by any means except for Democratic means. And there's been a lot of Democratic commentary last couple of weeks. Oh, my gosh, you know, we can't rely on the courts to defeat him. Now we've got to rely on the voters. Well, what do you think? That's what you're supposed to do in the first place. But as Fareed said, they want these shortcuts and illiberal shortcuts.
Yeah, I also wanted you to hear this because I think it's important, too, on those court cases. The New York case, it's going to be tough for the president. Why? Because it's New York. I mean, if it was upstate New York, I'd say he's most likely going to win. It's not a strong case, and we know that's the Alvin Bragg case that nobody wanted to bring forward, including two other previous DAs. So they're going to bring it forward, led by Matt Colangelo, fresh out of the Biden Justice Department. But, of course, there's no link to the White House. I was shocked by this. Even though it's going to be 4 or 5 weeks and the president's got a strong case, a lot of people do not think he can win that case in New York. And listen to what Andrew Weissman said could be the result of that. Cut 21.
You know, he could be looking at jail. If you have someone who's contrite, if you have someone who shares that he's respectful of the rule of law, that this was an aberration, that is something that the court can take into account. But if you think that the defendant actually is running basically as an outlaw and is basically thumbing his nose at the judicial process, and it shows no sign of remorse and essentially is a recidivist, those are factors that a judge can consider. And I am sure that a judge like Judge Merchan, if there were to be a conviction, is going to factor all of that in.
Do you believe this?
Disgraceful. A recidivist for what? Right? A recidivist, it's a word with meaning. You've committed multiple crimes and keep on committing them. What's the crime? And this thing is, there's a reason the other prior prosecutors passed on it, right? It's an accounting matter, right? If he lied to his own books with really no harm to anyone, and it should be a misdemeanor that you charge once. Instead, he bootstrapped it up to a felony and then multiplied the offenses to get these dozens of charges. But the problem is, as you say, it's New York City. This has not been a friendly forum for Trump, right? He's just gotten repeatedly slammed. The only good thing that's happened to him is that the bond was reduced, but still, you know, a huge bond. So he's looking at a conviction here, and jailing him for this would be just there are no words for it.
Rich, we're not lawyers, but I'm just going to use logic. The judge has donated to the Biden campaign. It was only like $100, but he donated. He's got a daughter that's getting millions of dollars from Kamala Harris to do their online marketing, millions of dollars from Democratic causes. Now, you know that the judge also sat down for an AP profile piece, and he's been brutal in the preliminary rulings. And the president's team's going, could we have a new judge, please? Why would you even have the perception to help him with appeal? Can I have a new judge, please? And the judge will ultimately decide if he should be recused. Isn't this incredibly corrupt on its face? And even if this is an honest man that's going to give it an honest look, perception matters.
Yeah, I mean, he looks and feels just like Engoron, or however you say his name, in the civil fraud case, who's just not an honest arbiter. And the idea that, you know, in all the coverage, you'll see, oh, Donald Trump attacked the judge's daughter. And you think to yourself, oh, that's terrible, right? This 12-year-old girl, whatever she is,
is just getting ran away.
That's not what it is at all. He's trying to make the case that this judge, by the family connection, has a problem. And this is a highly politicized case with massive political consequences. That's why it's happening in the first place. And the idea that a presidential candidate can't talk about it is also insane.
The gag order.
Profoundly wrong what they're doing.
And by the way, she's gotten $7 million, her company, from Adam Schiff to help him become the next senator from California. So, I mean, please, I know you're separate from your kids to a degree, but when there's already concern about a left-wing judge in a left-wing city having a left-wing daughter working for an administration that you supported with a campaign donation, I think we have a strong case, if I am Trump's attorney, to get a new judge. I'm sure the next one will be just as bad, but at least give the appearance of honesty. Rich, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Brian.
All right, listen, when we come back, I'm going to give you your turn, 1-866-408-7669, or you can write me, briankilmeade.com, and you just click on comments. Also, a quick note. April 27th coming up, right outside of Las Vegas for the Strip, Henderson, Nevada. I'm going to be on stage with History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's going to be a time like no other. It is going to be so much fun. If you love this country, if you want to have a good time, you want to go inside the numbers, inside this political season, and see great moments in history reenacted in a very unique way, BrianKilmeade.com. See you there.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, it does seem that the scales of justice are really imbalanced when it comes to Donald Trump. That, you know, there are things that he's engaged in, for example, that for any other criminal defendant would have landed them back in jail, in lockup, with their bail revoked. It seems to me that people haven't decided yet. I think our systems haven't decided how it is that you hold a former president accountable, because we've never been in this place before.
Right. This is just going to show you how different this country is. That is a former Maryland Congresswoman, Donna Edwards. You saw him on our channel a lot on Fox News Sunday when Chris Wallace was hosting it. She says people have gotten away. He's getting away with all these crimes, and he should be in jail and locked up. What are you talking about? The ridiculous civil case? What are you talking about? The case from 30 years ago where the woman can't even remember the year in which it happened or who was around, and it wasn't brought forward if it wasn't for a George Soros lawyer? That usually lands people in jail? Don't think so. What about the Alvin Bragg case? This thing that every DA who wants to upend Donald Trump couldn't find? Now they're bringing that forward? The documents case where you have 40 years of taken stolen classified documents by the current president of the United States? And he didn't even like the fact that he was called old in the report when he should have been charged? If it wasn't him being so old? And then you have the other case on January 6th. Good luck with that in Georgia. We'll see. Locked up how? I mean, that just shows you there are people listening to that and they think the president is getting away with it. So we'll find out what's going to be happening in this case. We also know this bond was put up by a really rich guy who's out in California, and he sold, I think he sold car insurance during his day. He's worth, I think, $7.6 billion. And this is the guy that put up the big bond that got the president out. And when asked about this bond, he said, well, it's really not a hard decision. The president had the cash. So I backed up the cash. I essentially financed the cash. And I think this guy was going to come up with the $450 million if he need be. This is good news for the RNC. They got $65 million in March. So they're getting back on track money-wise. And they're all coming from the same hymn book, literally from Mar-a-Lago with Laura Trump there and Whatley there, who's handpicked by President Trump. I don't have any problem with that. When Hillary Clinton took over, she saw a DNC that was flat on its back. She basically adopted it. The money that came in there went right to her campaign. It didn't go down to the other places. That could be an issue, no doubt about it. But we'll have to see. It's just amazing what we're seeing now, too, with this Alvin Bragg case. As I mentioned before, here's the judge doing a profile piece in the Associated Press, but the president, former president, can't speak, right? Judge Merchant has a daughter that is a high-priced consultant for Democratic causes like the Harris marketing campaign and the Adam Schiff campaign. And then you have also a situation where the judge himself, even though it's a small number, has donated to President Biden. I hope the president has a good attorney because he's got to put on a strong case. The lead guy going after him is Michael Cohen, who's still lying under oath, still begging to get out of probation. Now, by the way, his office never should have been raided the first year of the Trump administration. That's besides the point. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Get any of my books, including Teddy and Booker T.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th. Thanks so much for being here with Brian Kilmeade Show. It is torrential downpours. I understand it comes with the territory when it comes with April. One time I would just like it to be nice 2 days in a row, but I am so glad winter's over. Jim DeMoulin will be with us at the bottom of the hour. First-time guest for us, but if you have Instagram, you've seen some of his work. Co-founder of the School of Hard Knocks. He talks about it, very motivational. He finds people that are wealthy, seemingly wealthy, and find out what their story is, how many times they lost everything, how about what it took for them to get what they have right now, how much they are actually worth. And these people actually answer them, but they all leave clues and advice to how you can achieve their certain success. They're not famous people, so to speak, but they're successful people. And there's so many out there, so many positive stories. I just think James coming in here is going to be great. And check it out. If you're on Instagram right now, before he comes on, check out some of his work, the School of Hard Knocks Media. Daniel Hoffman is standing by. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The need to begin getting aggressive with Hezbollah, with the IRGC. Again, it's all Iran's race. Israel is prepared to raise the stakes at any minute.
That is Aaron Cohen, former IDF guy, widening the war. It looks like it's happening as Israel takes aim at Iran, Al-Quds force members, and increasing the pace of Hezbollah hits in the north. Does that work for the U.S.? Yes.
Number two.
The gag order impinges the First, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights of President Trump and the public's right to a public trial. The public must know all of the facts surrounding and underlying this case and the players in this case and their credibility.
And there's a lot of lack of credibility. I want a new judge. The Trump team makes their case for the new judge in the Alvin Bragg trial that's going to start in 2 weeks as more details come out about how compromised this judge, in fact, might be, and how the president got his $175 million bond.
Number one.
But I stand before you today to declare that Joe Biden's border bloodbath, and that's what it is. It's a bloodbath, and it's destroying our country. It's a very bad thing happening. It's going to end on the day that I take office.
Trump on the trail. He goes to bat for cops in Grand Rapids and Green Bay, slamming Biden's border policy, and very happy about the last set of Wall Street Journal battleground polls. He's winning in six of seven battleground states. The other one's just a tie in Wisconsin. Let's see if he can hold it. One thing we are saying right now, if you look around the world, it is a lot more dangerous place since he left. Some are circumstantial, and some are just flat-out bad policies that Joe Biden has put forward. Daniel Hoffman joins us now, station chief in Moscow, Iraq, Pakistan, South Asia, Europe, and most importantly, a Fox News contributor. Daniel, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the program.
So, Daniel, it came out yesterday that the U.S. not only warned Russia that there was going to be a terror attack, they even said the theater that it was going to take place, and it was brushed off. Now what?
Well, Vladimir Putin, you know, failed to protect his capital city, and that will have ramifications for him. You know, whatever Potemkin village illusion of stability that he thought he had created, you know, he put himself forward to the Russian people and his security services as the guy who was going to bring stability and order to Russia after the chaotic Yeltsin years. And if the population questions whether he's the right guy or not, I think the Federal Security Service, Putin's goons, can handle that. But his own security services have to be wondering, like, is he the right guy to handle this? This is after a major intelligence failure in Ukraine, where they failed accurately to assess Ukraine's will and capacity to fight. And then this terrorist attack that arguably could have been prevented, another massive intelligence failure. When you've got a mass casualty terrorist attack in your capital city that you had a chance to prevent, and the guys, the incident response was even awful. The guys fled the scene. They weren't even detained at the scene, which they should have been.
Yeah, they didn't get all of them, did they?
Well, we don't know. Reportedly, they were able to apprehend 11, but there's a larger network than that. These guys had money and guns, and that's something I'm sure the Russians, they're mounting a full-court press right now to determine who the rest of the, you know, what the rest of the network looks like and find them and fix their location and apprehend them as well. But look, I think there's a lot of justifiable concern. While Vladimir Putin was talking about fictitious Nazis in Ukraine and focused on that brutal war that you know, Prigozhin, Yevgeny Prigozhin, the now dead leader of the Wagner Group, exposed all those lies. While Putin's doing that and focusing Russia's resources there, Russia was vulnerable to a terrorist attack. And so that's a bad day for Vladimir Putin's regime security.
I think it is. Also, when you look at the fact that he's still trying to blame Ukraine, is that working?
Yeah, that's some weird cognitive dissonance right there. It's the same thing as saying that Russia's fighting a special military operation in Ukraine, or that, you know, there are Nazis running the Ukrainian government. It's all lies and obfuscation and subterfuge. That's the way he operates. But his own people, his own security services, they know the truth. And might be time for another CIA recruitment video. I've got a piece coming out in the Washington Times where I ask that question. That'll be out tomorrow. But, you know, Putin's own security services know about these lies. They know that their innocent fellow Russian citizens were killed as a result of Putin's mismanagement, and characterizing this attack as, you know, as Ukraine being responsible. I mean, they all know the truth about that, and that might create a vulnerability we could exploit. We could certainly use more good sources in the Kremlin telling us what Vladimir Putin's next plan is.
Hard to believe, but Secretary of State Anthony Blinken yesterday criticized the Ukrainians for blowing up an oil field in Russia. They said it's not good. We don't want them to strike inside Russia. Dan, what are we doing? I mean, are we going to support this or no? Here we are 2 years in.
Yeah.
Russia's blowing up the entire infrastructure of Ukraine, and they can't hit any spot in Russia?
No, we should be telling them to do what they want, or if we don't have the guts to say that publicly, just keep our mouths shut about it and let them go about their business. Look, Ukraine is trying to hurt Vladimir Putin's war machine, and this is certainly one way to do it, because Vladimir Putin right now has the funds, thanks to exports of his hydrocarbons to China, particularly, but also to India. And so Ukraine has taken the fight to the enemy. God bless them for doing it. And they're using drones to launch these attacks because we have not provided them with the equipment that they need. Of course, we've been waiting 6 months for the Ukraine supplemental to pass, and there's blame to be passed around on both sides of the aisle for that. But please don't, you know, tell the Ukrainians to take it light on the Russians when the Russians have a history, if you look at this war, of ruthlessly deliberately targeting Ukrainian civilians in hospitals, maternity wards, neighborhoods. The Ukrainians have every right to take the fight to the enemy.
Of course. So this is what drives people crazy who want to support their effort in Ukraine. Not under Joe Biden's instincts and rules, halfway in on everything. All talk, no organization, can't get Patriots, can't get HIMARS. You get Patriots, get HIMARS. So F-16s, we'll take our time. We'll take a year to train pilots. We'll slowly get it. No, we're not going to give it to you. We'll have somebody else give it to you. All this stuff, it's never effective in any war that I could tell. How do you feel about this new move to have a repo act where Ukrainian goes out and gets some of the repossessed Russian ships, money that's frozen in Belgium to the tune of $225 billion, and start spending it on the Ukrainian war machine? Can we do that?
I'd like to see us do it. I mean, there's a lot of legal hurdles, I guess, that we have to think about crossing before that happens.
Well, the speaker wants to do it. You know, the speaker wants to do it.
Yep, the interest is certainly there for the taking, the interest on that money. Whether they could get to all that money is another story. But, yeah, I'm with you 100%. Look, if the Biden administration had gone all in early on this and said we're in it to actually win it, we might have had a better chance. We might not be in this place that we're in right now. But when your slogan is as long as it takes, I mean, I can't think of anything worse than that. That makes some think of the forever wars that we fought in Afghanistan and Iraq, which for some in the Republican Party particularly is not where they want to be. Okay. But we could have had, you know, look, we're allowing Vladimir Putin to run an operation against us. He's used nuclear rhetorical brinkmanship that scared the Biden administration enough that they won't do what's right. And as you said, we've never given Ukraine what they needed fast enough so that they could use it on the battlefield. And that's cost a lot of Ukrainian lives. It's the same thing when we were quick to say that we didn't launch that strike in Syria that Israel took on the commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps for Lebanon and Syria. That was a great targeted kinetic strike by Israel. Neither Iran nor Russia wants a war with the United States and our NATO allies. We should behave like that and again, not hold back our allies and partners like Ukraine and Israel from taking the fight to terrorist enemies, or in the case of Russia, a state actor that invaded Ukraine. I mean, please. Where's Ronald Reagan's policy when you need it, Brian?
Well, I will say this, Dan. For those Republicans out there resisting on giving Ukraine aid, do not in one breath say, I don't want to get involved, it's not our war, and at the same time say, I wish Reagan was still in as president. Because you know Reagan would have given everything right away.
Yeah, I think I would say this. It's not our fight. Ukrainian soldiers and civilians are fighting and bleeding and dying on the battlefield. But it is our war. And what Ukraine is fighting for matters to us. It's in our national security interest, and it's costing us less than 5% of our DOD budget. There's an incredible return on investment there to cut the Russian army down to size, 300,000 plus casualties. They've got hardly any tanks left. And this is going to deter Vladimir Putin from launching further attacks potentially against NATO partners. If you don't fight him in Ukraine, you know, we're risking a confrontation between Russia and the United States. I know it's hard to predict those sorts of things, but I think we'd be risking it if we didn't support Ukraine and stop Russia at the point of attack there, as opposed to if Russia were to take over Ukraine. That would have incredibly implications geopolitically, also trade. You know, we're going to lose a lot of trade that we get from Ukraine. And there are U.S. businesses right now operating in Ukraine. And after Ukraine wins, hopefully, and we get a good post-conflict reconstruction plan, there will be lots of opportunities for U.S. business to engage overseas.
David,
in Ukraine.
I want to talk about Israel and that strike on the Al-Quds members, killed 7, cut 30. David Sanger, New York Times.
So it shakes the Iranians. It makes them begin to look for spies within their midst. So in addition to the the actual event. What you're getting is sort of a psychological warfare that we're so plugged into you that we can get at it. And that's, of course, been the key whenever the U.S. and Iran together have gone after an Iranian nuclear facility. And of course, remember, it was President Trump who ordered the killing of the senior commander of the Quds Force, General Soleimani, back in 2020.
So we know that this is done. A message is sent. People fear there's expanding war, but there's no way Israel is going to let Iran continue to create havoc in and around their country. So do you agree with the shot taken? I guess you do. And what do you think Iran will do in response?
Well, what did they do after we killed Soleimani? A lot of tough talk, but at the end of the day, not much at all. Iran doesn't want a war with Israel, with Israel even. They would lose that war. They'll fight to the last proxy. They'll fight to the last dead Palestinian civilian. Forget about Hamas. But they don't want to be involved in a direct confrontation with Israel or the United States. And sometimes I think we just don't, in our country at least, understand that our adversary, our enemy, Iran, is far weaker than we believe. And I we'll see what happens. Again, it's hard to get into the business of predicting, but I would have taken that strike against the risk of whatever escalation, like Iran is already supporting the Houthis, Hezbollah, terrorist groups in Iraq and Syria operating against us. So how much worse can it get? This is going to deter them. It tactically, it's a huge success because this was a guy, you know, a Quds Force senior military leader. And when he's gone, it'll be far more difficult for Iran, just like it was after they lost Soleimani, to conduct operational military kinetic attacks against Israel. And there were other Quds Force guys who were there as well who were killed. So tactically, it's a great success. And strategically, you're showing Iran that you can find and fix and finish them at a time and place of Israel's choosing. Good on them.
Dan, I just want you to hear this. I'm up against a break, but General Frank McKenzie raised some eyebrows, but just woke some people up after the ISIS-K attack in Russia and the success that they had, as well as what they had in Iran. This is what he said over the weekend. Cut 36.
So ISIS-K in particular, but ISIS in general, has a strong desire to attack our homeland. We should believe them when they say that. They're going to try to do it. And I think the threat is growing. It's begun to grow as soon as we left Afghanistan and took pressure off ISIS-K. So I think we should expect further attempts of this nature against the United States as well as our partners and other nations abroad. I think this is inevitable.
And he went on to talk about the border being the best entry point. I'm sure you've heard that. The FBI director has said that. General McKenzie is just underlining that. Your thoughts?
ISIS-K enjoys the same sort of ungoverned space in Afghanistan that al-Qaeda did before 9/11. They have an external operations capability demonstrated by mass casualty attack in Russia, also, as you noted, Iran and Turkey as well. That plus our porous southern border means that we are more vulnerable today than we have ever been, and that is of grave concern. Now, the question is what we do about it. We don't have the same find, fix, and finish capability that we used to have when we had 2,500 troops in Afghanistan and a bunch of intelligence operatives stealing secrets and recruiting spies. So, yeah, this one would keep me up at night if I were still in the government. It keeps me up at night in the, you know, out of the government.
Dan Hoffman, appreciate it. We really wore you out today. Thanks so much, Dan.
That's always a pleasure, Brian. All the best to you and the listeners.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. I'll have a couple of minutes when we get back, and then we're going to visit with James Damoulian, co-founder of the School of Hard Knocks, and how to get through it all. Don't move.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up next, we're going to find out how to inspire you and find out how to start a business and how to overcome some obstacles in your life by hearing those great stories that you hear on a regular basis. But you know what's coming up in July? Mike Tyson is going to be fighting Jake Paul. Last night, he was on with Sean Hannity. We hope to catch up with him, too. He was Mike. Cut 44.
I will do just that, but dislike him? No, I don't. I do not have no grudges against him. He's beautiful. And no, it's not from that perspective. This is from my point of view of grabbing glory. You know, never for money, only glory. I would never risk my health for money.
He said a little bit more, cut 43.
I have a weird personality. I don't think it's weird, though. Whatever I'm afraid to do, I do it. And that's how it is. I was afraid for the Roy fight. I was scared to fight again. I was 100 pounds overweight. I was however old, 54, 53. And I said, let's do it. Anything I'm afraid of, I confront it. And that's my personality. Like right now, I'm scared to death. But as the fight gets closer, the less nervous I become because it's reality. And in reality, I'm invincible.
Right. He's going to be 56 years old. He looks really good in training. You know, I just interviewed him so many times. And then later he writes how much he was on drugs. Even though his body looked great, his mind was a mess. And he was not training nearly as hard as he let on. So even if 56 is a chance that you really have the guy who's clean for the longest period of time since he was in his teens.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. If you're watching online right now, if you're watching on the app, you hit click on watch and just swipe over to see Fox News Radio or watch on Fox Nation. We're streaming because we have first-time guests that you may have seen on. I saw on Instagram. I don't carry TikTok because I don't want the Chinese knowing everything. But James Demoulian is here, co-founder of the School of Hard Knocks. Also is here is Jack, your brother, older brother, and Joshua Smith. Guys, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So what I watch on Instagram is the School of Hard Knocks. Do you guys have a name for your group, your production company?
That's it, the School of Hard Knocks. That's our media company. That's right. Us.
So tell everyone what the focus is. Why don't you start, James?
Absolutely. So
yeah, try to get a little closer to the microphone.
For sure. So the three of us, we started the channel. You know, we're from the Washington, D.C. area. And about 3 years ago, we came together to create one of the largest business finance media channels in all of social media. We grew it to over 4 million followers in 3 years. And the goal is to get advice from industry experts that have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of experience in finance and real estate and tech to be able to pass on those life lessons that entrepreneurs, career professionals have learned to be able to bring that onto the younger generation. You know, we were very blessed and fortunate to have a lot of great mentors and people in our career that were able to help us out.
But you're only 21.
Only 21 years old.
And you've already had mentors.
Absolutely. Right. Well, I say more so as like, you know, our dad, for example, he ran one of the largest military bases in the entire world in Camp Humphreys in South Korea. So we grew up, you know, seeing him lead tens of thousands of people. A lot of our peers didn't have that experience and were able to see that. And so because we were very fortunate to have that, you know, we wanted to be able to kind of pass that on to other people around us.
And Joshua, your dad served together, right?
Yeah, they served in Iraq together at the same
time. Is that how you met?
Well, we actually met. We were in the same Boy Scout troop. We all became Eagle Scouts together.
Wow, that's what a lot of military families do. So tell me, Jack, how you fit in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when the first three of us started out, we literally would just go up and go to the kind of the wealthiest districts of Austin, Texas, which is where we're based. We would go up and we would just go and try to have conversations with people, business owners, people that are high in tech, really doing fascinating things. And we would just try to pitch them on, hey, can we just get 5 minutes of your time? We're trying to get advice for the younger generation, all the kids out there that want to be entrepreneurs, want to do great things and have big dreams. They don't have the mentors around them. Can you just give us 5 minutes of your time? We have some questions we'd like to ask you. And the majority of these people, they have never been on social media. This is when we post them on our page, this is the most viewership they ever get. Like, these are people that have created great careers in finance, real estate, tech, and they just have never had that chance to give back to share the wisdom that they've accumulated over 20, 30, 40 years of a career.
And it's flattering to be asked, to be honest, because a lot of, you know, it's obviously if you're a famous Dallas Cowboy, everybody knows, we know your contracts, we know your signing bonus, we know you drafted. But a lot of people driving around in nice cars, huge houses, and you wonder, how do they get that?
Yeah.
And that's, you wondered that, but you took action. What I think people should understand, we're about to play a clip, is you're not sitting down in an antiseptic studio after having a book or book them. You're walking up to them on the street in a Maserati or whatever they have and saying, hey, do you have a second? Here is your interview with James Keyes. And this is you, right, James?
Yep.
Okay, so is there anything I should know before I roll the clip?
No, this is James Keyes, the former CEO of 7-Eleven and Blockbuster.
Cut 45.
What was the biggest driving factor of your success that enabled you to work your way up and become a CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company like 7-Eleven?
I'll give them to you. They're my gift.
First,
change. People hate change. Everybody hates change. Harvey McKay, a friend of mine, best-selling author, says the only one that likes change is a wet baby. People react differently to change, and they like go, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Well, change is reality, and change equals opportunity. So I've coined that expression. CEO is all about change equals opportunity. If you embrace it, you'll see that if I respond to this change and others don't, I'm going to turn that into shareholder value. The second is confidence, because when things change, you lack confidence. You're like, oh no, woe is me. What's going to happen, right? But confidence is all about preparation. So the more you prepare, the more you can win.
That was somebody you ran into how?
We were just in Highland Park in the shopping district in Dallas, Texas.
You recognize him?
No, didn't recognize him. Just wanted to have a conversation with him.
So you walked up on him cold?
Correct.
Did you just sense that he had money?
You can kind of just tell. We've been doing this a long time. You know, we've interviewed over 1,000 people, you know, so you can kind of just – and plus when you go to those areas, right, where it's like, you know, there's just really high percentages of people that are kind of in that class, you just you can note sometimes.
Jack, how many times did you get the Heisman where they're like, excuse me, leave me alone, none of your business?
Absolutely. So, I mean, when we were first starting out, we really had to kind of nail down, like, what is that pitch, you know, asking people for their time. They don't know anything about you. You have to establish credibility really quickly as to that you're doing this for a good cause. Hey, this isn't for, you know, a joke on social media. We actually have a really serious cause and goal that we're trying to help provide this content for. And so when starting out, I mean, you would have people, you know, people would cuss at you, people would, they'd throw the hand up, they would just walk away, or they'd come up with some sort of excuse why they can't talk to you. It's the same thing in sales. You know, you're going to get a bunch of rejections, but at the end of the day, if you really understand why we're doing this, then all those times that we were told no, it was just closer to getting that next yes.
And before I roll the next clip, Joshua, do you write this stuff down? Do you like, are you making a good segment, or in your head, you're saying, can I use this stuff for my life?
Oh, absolutely. Because the greatest thing about what we do is not only do we genuinely enjoy our work, but we also get to learn lessons along the way. Because these people, like we said, we're not talking to people who have maybe just done it for 1 or 2 years. We're talking to industry experts, people who have been very successful in their field throughout 20, 30, 40 years. And so we're able to pull their insights and pull some pieces of wisdom out of them, and not only apply it to our own business, but also share that wisdom with others.
So you walked up on Justin Waller. He's the owner of Red Iron Construction company based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Anything I should know before I roll it?
No, he's a G. He's a real G.
What does that mean?
Like, he's a goat, you know?
Oh, yeah. Greatest of all time.
He is.
See, should I have known that, Pete and Eric? Is that, did I just reveal myself?
I'll just say, like, he's a stand-up guy. Like, he's a real legit businessman.
48.
What is your best self-improvement advice for the younger generation out there?
As unpopular as it might be, get your ass in shape. When you walk in a room, people treat you differently. When you tell somebody that you can do something, they believe you because you're walking around displaying discipline. Let me show you something. Give me this hand. You see that? That says something to me when I see it. That means you've been working. So I know when you want to come talk to me that you are worth talking about because you're not just some punk. You're actually working hard trying to get your life together. I respect that. It's hard not to respect a person that's in shape. All across all the entire world, no matter what language, no matter what country, no matter what business, if a man walks in a room and he's put together and you can tell that he's put his body through pain and he's built his body up, it's impossible not to respect it. I could hate the person and be like, but I respect him.
All right. Who wants to take this? Jack?
I got it.
Oh, you got it. Go, James.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was an interview that we did with him. I asked him for his best self-improvement advice, and I couldn't agree more.
He's in really good shape, this guy.
He's in great shape. And he was talking to me because I was interviewing him.
And you're in good shape.
I was interviewing him in his Lamborghini, and he had pointed out my hand because he could tell that I had calluses on it because I work out a lot. And it's great actionable advice, in my opinion. I would tell anybody that if they're broke right now, they don't have any money, if you go in a room and you're put together and you're in shape, you automatically kind of deem a certain amount of respect. People, they genuinely
– shoulders back. You keep your head
steady. They gravitate
steady.
Towards you. They want to be around you. Hey, this guy's disciplined, right? You can tell that he's disciplined. If he's been able to build his body up like that, even if you may not have the financial means or just a status per se, like that is a great actionable step. And it's great advice.
Right.
It's great advice.
Yep. Did you walk – go ahead.
No, I was going to say is because whether you like it or not, first impressions are still very much so a real thing. So if you go into a room and you look like a bag of potato chips, you know, you're busting out the seams, you know, people aren't going to take you as seriously because if you, you know, especially if you're giving them business, if you can't take care of yourself, how can you expect to take care of them?
And I think that's pretty certain, too. The other thing is it's a way of taking action. Right? I'm frustrated. The job didn't come through. They never called me back. So you're taking action and doing something productive. And people like to know you have that discipline. Did you guys get that, though, from the military, too? I mean, there's discipline, there's regiment. That's what the kind of lives you guys had growing up, didn't you?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, our dad, he ran Camp Humphreys. He was the garrison commander of the largest overseas military base.
You watch
in the world.
People training all the time.
Absolutely. All the time. And you see that it was instilled in us as far as like what was expected to always do our best and always kind of put, you know, forth our best efforts, no matter like what we were doing, whether it was school, whether it was scouts, baseball, you know, trying to, you know, higher level. And we just always wanted more.
Now, is it also true? Were you part of the kids that had to keep moving?
Yes, yes.
So that also brings kids outgoing, doesn't it? I'm going to walk next door and find out who the kids are in the neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Most kids don't have that.
Yeah, you're constantly having to adapt, right? You don't have a set friend group. You're constantly moving around a lot. So it teaches you a lot, which is, again, one of the most important things is knowing how to pivot, you know, whenever you're facing adversity or just having to adapt. It's like what James Keyes was talking about, that change, being able to embrace it and not be woe is me, but actually make the most of it.
Yeah, we had grown up in Korea. And so getting that kind of at a young age, that outside world perspective and having to actually be immersed in another culture and have to go up and talk to people. They might not speak the same language. They come from a completely different set of beliefs and facts, opinions, values. And so with that, that kind of gave us the skills to be able to, you know, hey, everybody's got a certain perspective that they can come and share the world like we do on our channel. And that's why I think that ultimately helped us to be able to go up to so many different people and ask them for their advice.
I don't know if this is the cut, but I don't. His name is he's Nigerian, right? Is it Odi Anunnaku?
Anyi Adenukwe.
Anunnaku.
Anyi Adenukwe.
So you walked up on him.
Yep.
He looks rich.
Yeah.
He looks successful.
In the Rolls Royce.
And you also pointed out, well, a lot of these guys, you asked him, did you ever lose everything? They almost all of them said, yeah.
Yeah.
So you got to be willing to lose.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I lost that one, but I'm not going to lose. I'm going to come back. I'm going to learn from it. Here's a little from him. He's the CEO of... is it Glow Training?
Glow Tanning. It's one of the largest sunspot tanning franchises in the entire country.
Who would think a black guy from Africa would be ahead of tanning?
Yep.
Cut 47.
Is this your Rolls Royce?
Yes, sir.
What do you do for a living?
I own a sunspot tanning franchise that has 75 plus locations in like 13 states.
We go all over the country just asking business owners their advice to young entrepreneurs. Thought you had a beautiful car. I want to know if we asked just a few questions. What has been the most amount of money that you ever made in a single year?
Multiple seven figures.
For someone out there, they're trying to scale their income from six to seven figures. What advice would you give them?
The biggest thing is people are control freaks, and there's a really good book. It's like super short, but it's called Great CEOs Are Lazy, and basically says that if you can delegate and somebody can do the task 70% as well as you can, delegate it. So like I'm a master delegator, so I find people and I put them in positions to do things, give people opportunities in a sense of like I will buy a company and give somebody equity, so therefore that's their baby. You know, if it's a, say, a six-figure profit business where it's, you know, it's making $600,000, you're 50-50 partners, now you're making $300,000, you're literally doing nothing.
How great is that?
It's some of the best.
You guys were
advice.
All nodding with this.
Yeah. It's some of the best business advice that I've ever heard. People will take you places that money can't, and the most successful people, they know how to bring other people in. One of the biggest, our favorite business quotes that we always stick by is that I'd rather have a slice of the pie than 100% of grape. A lot of people, they want to be that solopreneur, wear all the hats themselves, when there's people that have, you know, been in this game for a lot longer than you and have a lot of value to provide. And if you have any slight of value add to them, it's like, hey, a lot of people are willing to collaborate with you and team up. So we're big believers in delegating to elevate.
But yeah. But Joshua, the other thing is you have to have confidence.
Yep.
I started this business, but I see this guy or this woman, they're really smart. You have to be confident enough to say, okay, they can overwhelm me. They know more. Let them lead. Because if your goal is the big picture, you want people to bring you there no matter who they are, right?
Yep.
It can't be about you.
Yep. Absolutely. And I think just to reiterate what James is talking about, is I think people really get stuck on being that solopreneur, thinking that I can do it all from all myself. But in the reality is, what do you do if you get sick? You know, what do you do if, you know, you have to go to a funeral? And the reality is you need a team in order to elevate and go to the next level, because you can get to a certain amount of success by yourself. But ultimately, great leaders in every big business, you need to bring others in order to scale and become successful.
All right. James Demoulian is here. His brother, Jack, is also here, and Joshua Smith together. They co-founded the School of Hard Knocks Media. But believe it or not, their business is helping everybody that watches and listens. Across all platforms, they have over 4 million followers in just 3 years, and they're not – you're the oldest at 25.
Josh, I'm 25. The oldest, 25. I'm 24.
24. Yeah. Okay, excuse me.
You're good.
You're the oldest at 25. That's amazing what you've already done. More to learn, more cuts to hear from, and then also where to find them. You can find them at
– The School of Hard Knocks.
To the School of Hard Knocks. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Clarity, simplicity. The hardest thing in the world is to keep things simple. So I think it was Michelangelo or somebody that said true elegance is in simplicity. I can't lead if you can't understand. So it's up to me to keep things simple and clear. Change, confidence, clarity. You want to know the path to being a CEO of a company or your life? It's those three things.
So interesting. James Keyes, former CEO of Blockbuster, now 7-Eleven. Oh, and 7-Eleven, talks about some of the keys to his success, how he became a CEO. And that was James Demoulian who asked him the questions. With him also is his partners, Joshua Smith and his brother, Jack. Welcome back, guys. Just a little bit more from, I know you're really impressed with James Keyes. So, Josh, you want to tell me about him?
Absolutely. So what's I think is something very interesting about James Keyes is everyone, I feel like, knows him for Blockbuster because he was Blockbuster for a stint of a few years, not during the actual He was a CEO of Blockbuster for a few years, but also prior to that, he was a CEO of 7-Eleven. And he was a part of a really cool process of 7-Eleven. He's the reason that taquitos are in 7-Eleven, the reason that you have the digital processing at the gas pumps. And he really embodies a lot of the advice that he gives of change equals opportunity. Because back on that time when he was talking about when it was the early 2000s, you know, credit cards, debit cards are really starting to become mainstream, and pretty much what we were learning is that, you know, they did not want to offer digital processing.
Oh. Right. Go ahead.
They did not want to offer digital processing at the actual gas pumps. So what he was able to do is throw in those ideas to the actual – to the board of directors, and he was able to give those ideas to the board of directors and pretty much pitch that, like, look, if we offer digital processing at the gas pumps rather than at making everyone pay inside, we will get more customers and make more business for our money. And pretty much they split tested it at a few locations, and he realized that that's exactly what happened. Is right. When they actually put out the gas pumps, the business took off.
The School of Hard Knocks is the name of their media company, and that's where you see him. I saw him on Instagram. You could be seeing him on TikTok. You could see their page on YouTube. And they started this about 3 years ago. Now, you mentioned you got 4 million followers. What blew me away is how many views have you gotten?
In the last 3 years, we've generated over a billion views. Over a billion views.
So are you even surprising yourself with this?
You know, I think so. And initially kind of it caught up to us, like especially like just about every city we go to now, whether it's Miami, Los Angeles, Austin.
People know you guys.
All the time. Every city we go to, we'll have people that come up to us and be like, hey, man, we love your videos. And what's even more fascinating about that, in my opinion, is that we have people from countries like India, Australia, Africa that will reach out and be like, hey, man, I was really struggling in my job. I actually quit my 9-to-5 to really go all in on my business venture and whatnot. And like when you get messages like that, it's very inspiring to see kind of like the work that you're doing is paying off to help other people, you know, go for what they want.
And you know what I think? Just run me through some of the questions you ask them. And a lot of these people, I think people are going to be heartened to know, yes, they're successful. But every single person that I watched that you interviewed talked about, yeah, I lost everything. Or I failed here. I just picked up. I learned. I moved. And that's just it. The resilience also comes through in what you guys picked out, right?
Absolutely. And what you learn is that, again, the most successful people, they have hit rock bottom. But at the end of the day, winners have a bounce back spirit. And that, you know, what you learn with a lot of these people is that you could take everything from them. They could hit zero and they'll make it all back because they have the mindset to be able to steward that. Once you have that mentality and it's ingrained in you and you've already built up some skill sets, you can take everything away from a lot of these people and they'll make it all back.
Did you guys go to college?
Yes. Oh, well, two of us did. My brother and I, we graduated from the University of Texas. He was a college dropout.
I think what was really cool was that, like, when we first started the channel, all three of us had kind of different places from in education at the time. You know, I was finishing up college. James was just starting college, and Josh had moved on from college to start Better Things, to start his own business. And so through that, all those experiences, we had all different perspectives in where we were at in our educational journey, but we all loved entrepreneurship, and we knew that that was the focus and what we wanted to dive in on in order to start the School of Hard Knocks.
Wow, and that's why I've had so much success. Is the best yet to come?
The best is yet to come. We have so much more on the way. We're just excited to keep growing and keep making these things happen.
Well, from the first when the first tape I saw, I was impressed. I couldn't even be. I'm even more impressed now having to meet you guys. Go look them up and follow them at the School of Hard Knocks. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Kaylee McGee-White will be here with us in a little while. She's a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. She's a great political mind. I look forward to talking to her. And we'll try to squeeze in some calls this hour. It's been very busy, and we're trying to follow everything as it happens. Brett Baer is standing by. Keep in mind, too, just a quick note, you can follow us every single, every hour, every day. If you have to leave your local affiliate, just go to the Fox News app, click on watch at the bottom. You could actually see the stream or click on the headsets if you're going to be just audio. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The need to begin getting aggressive with Hezbollah, with the IRGC. Again, it's all Iran, Trace. Israel is prepared to raise the stakes at any minute.
That is true, Aaron Cohen, former Israeli special ops officer. The widening war, it looks like it's happening as Israel takes aim at Iran and increases the pace of Hezbollah hits. Does this work for the U.S.? I say yes.
Number two.
The gag order impinges the First, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights of President Trump and the public's right to a public trial. The public must know all of the facts surrounding and underlying this case and the players in this case and their credibility.
That is true. David Schoen, former Trump impeachment lawyer. I want a new judge. The Trump team makes their case for a new judge in the Alvin Bragg trial as more details come out on how the president got to the $175 million bond amount.
Number one.
But I stand before you today to declare that Joe Biden's border bloodbath, and that's what it is. It's a bloodbath, and it's destroying our country. It's a very bad thing happening. It's going to end on the day that I take office.
Trump on the trail. He goes to bat for the cops, slams Biden's border policy, as you just heard, and has to be happy about the latest Wall Street Journal battleground polls. We have it all. Brett Baer getting set for a special report coming up in 6 hours. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, bro.
Brett, do you think I saw you mention yesterday the polls are closing somewhat. Was that before the Wall Street Journal poll came out, do you believe?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was several different swing state polls had Biden moving up a little bit. Now, the Wall Street Journal poll has Trump extending in a couple of states and roughly about the same. Remember, in several of those states, Trump was up 5-7, and now maybe it's 2-3. So
right.
I think both things are true.
So here you go. I think Georgia, it really closed down to 1. It was up bigger, but he's still up 5 in Arizona, still up 3 in Michigan. He's up 3 in Pennsylvania. Wisconsin tied, North Carolina 6, and Nevada is 4. That would be a big ad for the president if he could hold on to that. But he goes back and does something traditional. Remember those days, Brett, when people used to just campaign? No talking court cases, no pandemic. It was, hey, I got to get the Midwest, so I'm going to go to Green Bay. And I'm going to go to Grand Rapids. And he did that yesterday. There's no question why he is going for the immigration issue. It's kind of interesting the way he's doubling and tripling down on bloodbath.
Yeah, I know. You know, listen, this is the former president's MO. He's got something that throws the left, you know, into a tizzy and their heads explode. And the White House reacts to it. You know, and she doesn't choose to react to a lot of things in campaign context, but she reacts to that. And then you find bloodbath being used by President Biden and Peter Ducey asking about that. Yeah, I mean, listen, the former president gets it about how to use words and stir the pot, and that's why he's doing it. But what it is doing is focusing again on the issue of the border and how this is affecting not only border states, but also states across the country.
Here's KJP yesterday, because she just couldn't, because the word bloodbath created such an emergency. Cut to.
We're hearing clearly awful rhetoric from the other side. But what we know, what this president believes, and you've heard this president say this before, is that we know immigrants strengthen our country and our economy as well. It goes hand in hand here. Think about the critical work. These eight immigrants were doing on Key Bridge when it collapsed.
So this is they're going to make a big deal of bloodbath, but we know we got the montages of everybody using the word bloodbath, including all over CNBC and Fox Business. It's a common financial term.
Exactly. And the first time the former president used it, it was in relation to jobs in the auto industry. So, you know, context is key. Now I think he's just, you know, tweaking them and getting them to focus on the sentence. I mean, that soundbite's used, and he's making his point about immigration.
Where do you think we are at now when it comes to Ukraine aid? The speaker evidently is looking to do something Nancy Pelosi is very used to doing. He said, if you want that, the Iraq war funding, I need X, Y, and Z. And one thing the speaker, Johnson, is saying, if you want me to get that Ukraine aid and risk my speakership, I want you to start offering leases again on natural gas drilling, things to that nature. When they come back next week, will there be a Ukraine aid bill in the House floor?
I think so. I think it's heading that way. I think it's smart of the speaker. One, he's not afraid of the motion to vacate moves by Marjorie Taylor Greene and potentially others. Nobody else has the votes. And two, it's a smart political move because there are some and many moderate Democrats who have a problem on that LNG move by the administration done by regulation. You know, liquid natural gas is a big export, and to shut it down hurts the U.S., arguably, the people in many Republicans and some Democrats would say.
How about this, Brett? If you want to win Pennsylvania, don't tell them they can't have any oil drilling leases. That's where the natural gas, a lot of the natural gas is, and they basically put a foothold. They just put the brakes on. And they did it at a time in places like Lithuania, Estonia. They were counting on us. If they no longer were customers of Russia when it comes to natural gas, we're supposed to backfill them. I mean, who does this work for? How strong is this left-wing lobby on Joe Biden?
It must be pretty strong because the eventual benefit is to Russia. If we are not providing the natural gas, then they've got to go somewhere. And Russia is one of the places, and they didn't want to do that. I do think it's not smart politics. I also don't think it's smart politics to do the electric truck, you know, on for the changeover of commercial trucks. I think that that hurts a lot of not only trucking business, but different businesses that will pass on the additional costs to consumers. So it doesn't make sense. If you're going by a green agenda, I guess it does. But heading into an election where we've just been fighting inflation, there's a lot of reason to be skeptical of that move.
So I was listening to a podcast on the electric truck from a truck driver that's driving an electric truck. Evidently, the battery takes up a lot of room in the cab. Number two is to wait for a charger, you have to wait with other cars. And then you got to unload. I know this trucking vernacular, so please excuse me. I don't know it. But you unload the back, the trailer full of all the trailer part, and then you just have to bring the part you own. So you have to unload the rig, I guess, and then you got to wait in line with the Honda Preludes, and then you got to wait, and it takes forever to charge. It makes you less productive. It's going to make it harder. It's going to make prices go up because it's going to take longer to be delivered, and you're going to be able to put less in your truck. Right now, the math does not add up. And most electric truck drivers know it. Does anyone whisper that to the White House?
One would think. I mean, currently you cannot make it across the country. You can't without, you know, and there aren't enough stations along the way. They were promised to be built, but they haven't been built. Secondly, I've heard concerns about sitting on these batteries that are not fully tested long term.
Yep.
There's concerns about that. The truck drivers are sitting on top of them. And listen, there's all kinds of questions. And I think you're going to see a big pushback from not only the truck companies, but some of these consumers eventually that get the back end.
A couple of things I want to bring up. Ron DeSantis was for the 6-week abortion ban. But right now, Florida's at 15 weeks. So it looks as though the legislature has green-lighted 6 weeks, but would put it on the ballot in November. We know in places like Kansas, it brought the turnout, and Ohio, it brought the turnout. Does Florida really want this fight?
No. Republicans definitely don't want it. But what happened was the way they structured it, you know, it does seem, looking at this, that this was all designed for Ron DeSantis' run for the president and to get to the right of Donald Trump in Iowa. That's what it feels like. And while he got the legislature to go along with him, part of that deal was that they had to have the court weigh in on the 15 weeks. Once that happened, they could go to the 6 week that the legislature passed. But the judge also said that it would be put to a referendum, which is exactly what Democrats want. They think that makes the Senate seat in Florida competitive. They even think it makes Florida competitive. That's how bold they think this issue is with women.
Yeah, it's incredible. So yesterday, we understand, or the day before, Israel took out some Al-Quds force members, Iranian Al-Quds force members in Syria, in Damascus. So they killed 7. What does this do to this conflict? And what do you think the message was sent to Iran, who vow revenge?
Well, I think it is, we're coming after you, and you need to stop funding Hezbollah and Hamas. And clearly, Iran is directly behind, even tangentially, what they're seeing. Now, what it does mean is likely you're going to see Hezbollah step up. And that's been a big question mark since the beginning of the war. And if that happens, where is the U.S.? You know, currently we're in a posture, as the administration is, of trying to slow down, prevent the expansion, be careful about Rafah. If Hezbollah gets engaged, you know, where are we as a country? I think it's a real question.
Yeah, I guess so. And we know, too, that Israel is waiting for an $18 billion worth of weaponry. And it looks like Joe Biden is going to push Congress to do it. He says one thing that he's fed up is once the prime minister, he seems very angry at him. We have the majority leader demanding elections in Israel. But yet the president's willing to green light weapons. I'm glad personally that he's doing it or looking to push it. But how do you explain the two mindsets?
Well, I don't know if he has the votes for that in his own caucus. There's a growing emotion on the Democratic side that the U.S. is somehow complicit with what Israel is doing when it comes to civilian casualties. And this latest killing of the World Central Food Aid workers only exacerbated that. So the message on the Hill on the left is U.S. weapons are being used by Israelis to kill Palestinians. And as convoluted as that may be, without looking through the prism of October 7th, it's gaining traction. So maybe he knows that he doesn't have the votes. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation. Anytime you go halfway, especially when it comes to conflicts like this, you're always in no man's land. And the latest example is in Ukraine. The Ukrainians threw a drone strike on an oil field in Russia, and we don't support the attack. Really? It's okay for Russia to destroy Ukrainians' infrastructure after unlawfully invading, but we draw the line that Russia can't get hit back? I thought that was bizarre.
It's, it's part of this tone everything down, but Russia's never toning it down. There was a huge strike in Kyiv. There was all kinds of strikes that continue to happen on the large scale inside Ukraine. It's bizarre, I think, listening to some of the messaging on these foreign policy hotspots. They explain it that they're trying to get to a negotiating table in both places, but it's tough to do if you're tiptoeing around.
It is. And also, is there any retirements rumored for Republicans that could make Hakeem Jeffries speaker?
It's going to be close. There's nothing rumored as of yet, but you know, you get one more retirement, it is conceivable that Democrats offer some moderate Republicans chairmanships and say, you know, we'll make you king over here. And it's possible. It's possible.
It's incredible. I know the frustration when I'm in the minority, but I've never seen such a frustrated majority in my life. Have you?
No, it almost seems like they want to be in the minority, which is bizarre, but they haven't managed to actually pass things because they can't herd the cats well enough to get on the same page. And that's something Democrats have always managed to do.
Brett Baer, he's going to be hosting Special Report tonight at 6. He's also the author of To Rescue the Constitution, George Washington, the Fragile American Experiment, and History Club, Duel Across Time. Brett, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brett.
All right. We'll make sure to watch. 1-866-408-7669. I see you in New York. I see you in St. Louis. I see you around the country. I'll get to your calls next. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The states we're talking about today, Michigan, Wisconsin, neither of those has an abortion referendum on the ballot. Thank heavens, because I think those abortion referendums, which, by the way, will appear in Arizona and Nevada, other swing states, are very crucial to getting people out to vote, particularly young voters. And right now, young voters are defecting from Joe Biden enormously, and this is a huge concern for them. In Wisconsin and Michigan, you have a problem with young voters for Joe Biden because in Michigan, you have a large Arab American population, which is going to be very unhappy about the way he's dealing with the Mideast crisis in Israel. And in Wisconsin, you have pretty much the same problem.
That is Liz Peek offering her analysis on the bottom line last night. Let's go out to Claire, listening on FM News Talk 97.1. I'll be on with Mark Reardon later. Hey, Claire.
Hi. I would love to hear you go on with an anti-Ukraine war conservative, because I think half of your listeners are, you know, in the same camp that you are, and the other half would are in the camp that we shouldn't be putting our money or our effort in Ukraine. Thanks.
Where are you? What camp are you at?
Until there is a goal or a good audit on where our money's going, I'm anti-Ukraine war.
I love that both those things you say I agree with. So what I would do too, if I was Speaker Johnson, I'd say I want to name somebody that we all trust in order, whether it's a former general, retired general, who's going to follow every bullet to the front line. Number two, the goal was very easy to state. We're going to push Russia back as far as possible in order to get them to the table, and that we stop them in their tracks. Understand, every day that the Russians are bogged down and paying a price in Ukraine is a good day for us. And it shows the rest of the world how inept they are as a military. And we're backing people that just want to live a free and open life, that are going to be joining the EU right after. And they're also sending a message that if you go and take Taiwan, the world will turn on you and America will never give up on helping Taiwan survive. And that's what it's got to be. But Claire, both those things are relevant. The problem with this whole effort on my half is that Joe Biden's running it. Anthony Blinken's running it. Jake Sullivan's running it. But it doesn't mean the objective is not right for the country. I could see both. I could see both sides. But Ukraine deserves our support. You see the way they fight. And Zelensky is a brilliant leader.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Look at cases like Ruby Garcia, and they recognize that no matter how often Democrats try to argue that the bloodbath doesn't exist, mm-hmm. that the statistics of illegal immigrant crime actually aren't as large as Trump is portraying, they recognize that a case like Ruby Garcia's should never have existed in the first right. place. Those statistics should be 0%, because every single crime committed by an illegal immigrant is entirely preventable and is being yep. enabled by the Biden administration.
That's Kayla McGee White, who's going to be joining us in a moment. Last night, talking about the death of Ruby, who was killed by her illegal immigrant boyfriend. And the president found out about that, I think, coming up into Grand Rapids or the day of. And he says she's going to be on my list of people I'm going to have in mind and make sure illegal immigrants like this do not see the light of day. So these are one story after another. And what the president was saying is really this is a 50-state issue. It is no longer, those two guys saying you chose to live on the border in Texas. You chose to live in New Mexico. Hey, you wanted to stay in California and San Diego. That's the issue. It's your fault for living in Tucson. No. Now that it has become so overwhelming because of Joe Biden's policies, it is now a 50-state issue. And now you have crime. And when people say, well, the great percentage of these illegal immigrants are not criminals, well, how about 0%? Not one of them should be criminals because nobody belongs here. And we all know there's been illegal immigrants in this country, as was brought up to by me, someone in the Spanish community, Hispanic community. They said, yeah, when we came over, the thought was if you found somebody, they were just trying to stay underneath the radar, trying to work in a labor position. And then try to earn a living and then try to get their paperwork in order. That's not the mindset now. With me now in studio is Kaylee McGee White, a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. Hey, Kaylee, great to see you.
Great to see you, too.
Kaylee, first off, I just played your clip from last night talking about the death of Ruby. And for people to say, well, the greatest percentage of illegal immigrants aren't committing crimes or murder. It doesn't matter because right. they don't belong here to begin with, to think that that's your attitude and to think those are the quality of people we're bringing in.
Right. And it's gaslighting the public to pretend otherwise, to suggest that we should normalize any sort of illegal migrant crime. You're asking people to lower the expectations of their quality of life, of what this country's responsibility is, which is to secure its borders and maintain the safety of its citizens. So, you know, when the White House responds to Trump's speech in Michigan and says, well, he's exaggerating the problem, the fact is, it shouldn't be a problem at all, and we should not accept any less.
Right. I think I don't think the president is exaggerating. In 2016, they were saying that. Right now, I think in all 50 states, you're going to have people say, no, no, he was right. Do you see what RFK said yesterday? He said, I have a certain beliefs, but I've evolved on some of them, one of which is the border. I thought the former president was way too harsh until I went there. And sometimes candidates have great issues, and sometimes the issues come to the candidate. This is a time when the president's got both. Illegal immigration, crime and punishment. We're not punishing any criminals. And illegal immigration, committing crimes. This is exactly what he worried about. When they said we're going to take away sanctuaries, the president should take away sanctuary cities. Kaylee, you remember the reaction? Right to the courts. How dare you have to be so hard-hearted? Now, do you think that people in Chicago are going, yeah, how did we get here?
Right.
In New York?
Or the Denver official who had to beg migrants to go to other cities like New York because he knows that his own city can't afford them. And it's actually funny to watch Democrats realize in real time the consequences of the policies that they've pushed. Did they not think that if they declared themselves a sanctuary, that they would have to act as a sanctuary for the illegal immigrants? And, you know, it's interesting that you bring up RFK because I feel like there are several major public figures who have had similar political evolutions in regards to the migration crisis. You think about Elon Musk, who has become a very outspoken advocate against unfettered illegal immigration, against open borders, in large part because he also went to the border and saw the chaos for himself.
He was outraged by it, especially as somebody who had to fill out the paperwork and come here. He should be a first-round draft pick that should have had an easy time. He did not have an easy time getting here. By the way, the other part of the immigration system is working. If you're Canadian, if you're from Europe, it takes forever to be a citizen here. The restrictions are almost too strict. If you travel out of the country and want to come here through an airport, you know how time-consuming that is. So certain areas of our immigration system are very strict, and others are wide open and makes you feel dumb for actually doing it, for actually going about it the right way. What I think is also important is how many Chinese are coming through. Did you see the numbers? We are at 22,000 in 2024. I thought 23,000 in 2023 was a lot. We didn't get an answer on what they're doing here with their roller bags, landing in Mexico, coming here, looking like they got plenty of money. They don't look like they're coming out of a homeless shelter or a Uyghur compound.
No. And it was just the other week, there was a story down in Texas of one of the Chinese illegal immigrants was caught sneaking around a U.S. military base. What do you think he was doing at the U.S. military base? And Maria Bartiromo always makes a great point about this, in that the Chinese citizens cannot just leave China without the express permission of the state. They live in a communist country. The country controls everything that they do. So the fact that tens of thousands of Chinese immigrants are suddenly flooding our southern border, they are not doing so on their own volition. They are doing so with the permission of the CCP.
So the president had a conversation with President Xi yesterday. It did not come up. But look at these numbers. In 2021, there were 342 at our southern border. That even surprised me. They used to be heavily questioned. They used to have to go through layers to get through. Now they were told, don't ask questions, pass them through. Why would that be? In 2022, Joe Biden's in office 2 years, almost 2,000. Last year, 24,000. This year, 22,233. So what is going on? I mean, nobody doubts that they're our chief enemy. flying balloons over our country, buying up farmland, while with most of them, we're finding out almost all the fentanyl coming in, the compounds are located in China. I mean, how stupid are we?
Right. And we know that China's ultimate goal is the destruction of the United States. And what better way to accomplish that than by destroying us from within? They have our kids addicted to their social media platform, TikTok, which rots their brains.
Do you believe that should be shelved?
I do not think that any company has the right to sell American data, period, especially to our adversaries. I have my own qualms with the House TikTok bill that was proposed, but I do not think that TikTok should necessarily be a platform. I think it's extremely toxic and harmful to young adults beyond the CCP concerns. But you look at TikTok, you look at fentanyl, you look at China working with the drug cartels to also get our people addicted to toxic drugs. They are actively trying to destroy us from within. And when we do begin to collapse within ourselves, now you have tens of thousands of illegal Chinese immigrants who came here, sanctioned by the CCP to do so. You look at all these factors and you can see how it's just ripe for chaos at some point.
It is. Want to feel better about yourself? I always like when Bill Maher or some of these left-wingers look around and are not happy with what they see. So Fareed Zakaria, of all people, never had a show without saying something negative about Trump. Smart guy, obviously. He said this about what they did to Ronna McDaniel and how hypocritical it is and just really critical of NBC. Cut 12.
I think the point here is liberals are meant to believe in free speech. That is one of the foundational values of liberalism. And if you're going to say you're going to deplatform 85 million Americans, that's a lot of people. They say, no, it's not about that. It's that she lied. Well, you know, Bill Clinton lied under oath. I think last time I checked, he's been on MSNBC. They say, well, she's an election denier. Well, Stacey Abrams was an election denier about her own election, and they've had her on. Liberals often trigger backlash when they use illiberal means to get to their ends. You know, they're like, we're going to do what it takes. And the truth is, and I mean liberalism in a broad sense, liberal democracy, freedom of speech, constitutional, these are precious inheritances that we have.
So your thoughts about that? That would be something that I think you or I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to see some clarity from some of them every now and then. And I think that he realizes that NBC's decision to get rid of McDaniel is self-defeating in a way, because it proves that the people at the network, including the executives, don't actually have a lot of faith in what they believe. Because if they did, then what would be the harm of having one Republican contributor, Ronna McDaniel, come on air to challenge those beliefs? Why not have a robust debate? If they're confident in the things that they believe in, they would be able to do that and not freak out about it. But they did freak out because they cannot stand any challenge to their ideology, because they know that as soon as it's challenged, it crumbles.
Are you an outnumbered today?
I am.
So you have to head down. Kaylee McGee-White, thanks so much for being here. Hope we could do this again.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Kaylee. Thanks so much. Back in a moment. We'll take your calls. I see you, Steve, on WABC. We'll go upstate New York with Jane and so much more. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
The truth is that I love my brother, and it pains me to come out against him. But I am very concerned with the stakes in this election. And I'm very concerned from the polls I'm seeing that he takes many more votes from Biden than he does from Trump. And I think this election is going to come down to a handful of votes in a handful of states. And I'm concerned that his campaign and running for office as an independent is going to lead to Trump's election. And I feel that that will be catastrophic.
Rory Kennedy, younger sister of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's the oldest, 14 years old when his dad was gunned down. Rory Kennedy, more of a producer, bright, obviously, like all the Kennedys. But she's against her brother. A lot of them are, and they're not for him, and they're absolutely right. I think the third-party candidacy, fourth and fifth party, are going to make a huge difference. Can you imagine if RFK is on the stage with Trump and Biden? You know, I know Clinton loved having Perot there because he's more conservative, and he was very critical of George Bush. And when Perot went after Clinton, it was just that he's not ready. He's just a governor of a small state. Steve, WABC in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Steve.
Yes, just a moment of humor first. You mentioned about the request of prisoners to see the eclipse.
Yes.
Sure, it's dark outside. Great for a jailbreak.
Right. Hey, guys, yeah, go grab your glasses. Just promise me you'll come back.
Right. But my main point, though, in all seriousness, Xi Jinping and the cadres in China have all studied the famous book, The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And one of the basic principles there is that the greatest warrior, including a nation, is the one that has to fire the fewest arrows or spears. They didn't have guns back then. And how does that apply here? Well, they're manufacturing the fentanyl and marketing it to children. Why? Because the children will soon be in a couple of years of military service age. And therefore, they erode and deplete the pool of possible candidates for the Army, for the Navy to man the ships that would go over to the Pacific, or the people that would monitor the silos or missiles or planes. So they're actually already planning the military aspect of their aggression against the U.S.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, that they're trying to kill them. They're trying to get them addicted. They kill them. That's what fentanyl does. That's what's so bizarre. Drug dealers back then, with the people that deal with you in the back alleys, try to get you hooked with the heroin, and then they have a customer until they die. But these kill you right away. And that's right. And right now we cannot. I don't know how related it is to China and fentanyl, but right now we are down 24% from recruiting with the Army, the Navy. We're condensing how many positions. We're just erasing them. We have given up on trying to fill them. The Air Force is a little bit better, and the Marines are hitting their marks. But that is just so bad for military recruiting. I mean, and part of it is all I see is how great Wounded Warriors in Tunnels and Towers are. They're fantastic. But I want to balance it out with some other be-all-you-can-be type ads with the military and talk about the great battles that we fought and talk about the great people that emerged from these military backgrounds and the families that have served over generations, West Point, Annapolis, or people that just signed up and followed in their parents' footsteps and what it's meant to them to be able to look back and hang out and bond on this. Anything. I don't see it for cops either. Instead of just saying we want cops to fill up the academy, can you tell us how great it is to give back to your community, the things that you've done, the respect that you've been seen, what it was like when your parents did the job? I don't see any of those image ads. Believe me, if Trump wins, you will see that because he's going to want recruiting up. And it's a good deal in many respects. We're not in an active war right now. It's always dangerous. I get it. And you'll always be asked to do operations. I understand it. But what an opportunity to go to school and get it paid for and emerge with zero debt. I mean, you talk to Congressman Crenshaw. So he is out there, Dan Crenshaw. After he gets out as a Navy SEAL, he gets wounded, loses his eye. But he's able to go to, I think, Columbia or Harvard. And he's able to sit there and listen to how other people think, number one. But you get a real good education. And he only gets that because he serves these years, is a Navy SEAL, goes back, and then goes to Harvard, gets a sense of what this country's about, is now becomes a successful congressman in Texas. I would love to see some of that. And thanks for the call, Steve. You're always a good call. So what Steve was talking about is this. New York inmates are now suing because they're not able to watch the solar eclipse. Six inmates at a New York prison called Woodbourne Correctional Facility argue that on April 8th, it's going to be a phenomenon when the moon will pass through the sun or between the sun and the earth, immersing the part of the state in darkness in the middle of the afternoon. And it should warrant gathering, celebration, worship, and prayer. So these guys, all of them guys, want to be able to get out. Now, let me see. Should we let him out? Jeremy Zielinski's an atheist convicted of rape, first degree. Should I let him out? Travis Hudson's a Baptist convicted, of course, of sexual misconduct on a child. I think we should let him see the eclipse, don't you think? Bruce Moses, he's convicted on second-degree criminal weapons possession and possession of a controlled substance, assault in the second degree. Oscar Nunez, convicted of assault in the second degree, and also robbery. Gene Desmarit, a Muslim convicted of second-degree murder. And David High, Seventh-day Adventist, whatever that is, convicted of manslaughter, first degree. and they are suing us to allow them to get out of prison for what they say is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. For people doing life, I'm not really too worried about what they want and what they need. I am just amazed on how many lawsuits. Do you know what else the court did yesterday? Do you know those illegal immigrants that Governor DeSantis flew to the Martha's Vineyard on their own volition? Well, they are now given the green light by the judge to sue the city of Florida for not telling them the truth about where they were going. They told to go to Massachusetts. They ended up in Martha's Vineyard, which, by the way, nicer, more elite, better, and they don't even belong here. Snuck in, and they get flown first class, beautiful plane, just them, into Martha's Vineyard, and now they can sue. All right, make sure to watch One Nation Saturdays at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Also, Fox and Friends tomorrow from 6 to 9. And a quick note, you can get any of my books. People always ask, how do I get them signed for a birthday or event? You got Mother's Day coming up. Go to briankilmeade.com. There's a little box there, like 1-800-FLOWERS. You'll tell me what to write, make it short. Right to the point, and I'll sign it and send it. And then, of course, April 27th in Henderson, Nevada. It's going to be History, Liberty, and Laughs on stage. My chance to meet you and me, you to meet me, and have a great patriotic, motivational, inspirational afternoon, which to me is a lot of fun. Sponsored by Fox Nation. You get a lot of specials if you show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.